Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the May 10th, 2012 meeting of the San Luis Obispo County Planning Commission. Ramona, would you please call the roll?
Commissioner Christensen?
Here.
Commissioner Irving?
Here.
Commissioner Murphy?
Here.
Commissioner Topping?
Here.
Chairman O'Grady?
Here. All please rise for the flag pledge.
Of the United States of America, and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay, the first item of business is public comment for items that are not on the agenda. So far, the speaker slips that I have for public comment appear to be all for item one, except there's one speaker slip so far for item two. So, if anyone does wish to speak on items not on the agenda, please approach the podium and submit a speaker slip. Seeing none, I will close public comment and ask Ms. Griffin for planning staff updates.
The only update that I have for you is to let you know about your meeting schedule. And the key point on that is your next two meetings, May 24th and May 31st, have been canceled. From that point on, though, you're booked solid. So you have meetings in both meetings in July and
June.
Yeah. Both meetings in July, so July 12th and July 26th, and your August meetings all have items. So it looks like you won't be getting any meetings canceled in the summer. Sorry about that.
You could do a better job of scheduling it.
But at least your next two are canceled.
So, Ms. Griffin, are there two meetings each in June, July, and August, or is there a third one?
There was a third meeting that was tentatively scheduled on July 5th, and we have canceled
and that
meeting.
And that one is, yeah. Okay.
So it'll just be the standard second and fourth Thursdays in June, July, and August.
Okay. One update I had was the Coastal Commission. Commissioners may recall that there was, I guess it was last year, there was a large home on a bluff in Cayucas that commissioners voted not to approve, as I recall, but the board did approve it. Then it went to the Coastal Commission, and I read on their website that was not approved or there were problems with it. So I don't know what happens after that. Does anyone else have any information about that particular
case? That particular case, the coastal staff had recommended no substantial issue, which would mean that the Coastal Commission wouldn't hear the item. The Coastal Commission didn't agree with that, wanted staff to come back with additional information, so they'll actually have
another hearing
on it.
Okay, thank you.
I just wanted to say that I'm going to be gone the meeting of July 12th. I want to note that.
July 12th. I'm out. Okay. I hope you're going to Spain or some wonderful place like
that. No, I just got back from Istanbul. This time I'm just going to Oregon.
Okay. Okay. The next item of business is the consent agenda. Do commissioners or anyone from the public wish to pull an item on the consent agenda and speak to it? Hearing none, I would entertain a motion to approve the consent agenda.
Move to approve.
Second, please.
Second.
Ramona, please call the roll.
Commissioner Irving?
Aye.
Commissioner Topping?
Yes.
Commissioner Christensen?
Yes.
Commissioner Murphy?
Yes.
Chairman O'Grady?
Yes. Motion passes 5-0.
I've lost my video here. I just want to let somebody know.
Turn the slide down.
Oh, it just came back on. Thank you.
Okay. Ramona, would you please introduce hearing item number one?
Continued hearing to consider a request by the Land Conservancy of San Luis Obispo County in partnership with County General Services for a conditional use permit for the Octagon Barn Center. County file number SUB 2010-00053, Supervisorial District Number 3, Brian Pedrotti, Project Manager.
Thank you. Before we proceed with the staff report, I'd like to ask commissioners if they have any ex parte to report.
Yes. I visited the site in February with board member of the Conservancy, B.K. Richards, and Pete Jenny.
And I, too, I visited in, whenever our last meeting was in February. It was a pouring rainstorm with Mr. Richard and Penny Rappa and Pete Jenny, and a lot of rain.
Any other ex parte? Okay, I have one. My wife and I have long been members of the Land Conservancy. However, we're just members. We're not on the board of directors. We have no decision-making authority. So I feel like I have no problem making an unbiased review and decision on this particular application. Okay. Good morning, staff. Mr. Pedrotti, would you like to proceed?
Good morning. Good morning, Chairman O'Grady and Planning Commissioners. Brian Pedrotti, staff planner. The project before you is the Land Conservancy conditional use permit.
Okay, one moment for technical difficulties. Do we need help from
we're going to have to call the IT department.
Yeah, we're going to have to call IT. So,
okay.
How about a 10-minute break?
Okay. sounds like it's very necessary. So please excuse the interruption, but we need to get the technology working. So looks like 9:17 will resume, and hope we can get things fixed by then. I guess everything's plugged in. Staff, table, computer. Hey, it looks like the system has been rebooted and we're alive and well. So, Mr. Pedrotti, please proceed with the staff report.
All right, thank you. Brian Pedrotti, staff planner. The project before you is the Land Conservancy conditional use permit within the Octagon Barn. The Octagon Barn is proposed to be a site for an agricultural museum with events and meeting space, and the project is developed to be in two phases. Phase one would establish the Octagon Barn site as an agricultural and historical museum with a 5,000-square-foot event center inside the Octagon Barn with temporary events limited to 100 events of no more than 200 people per event, 112 parking spaces, water tanks, and street improvements to South Hygera Street. Phase two would include an indoor agricultural museum, classroom space, and a community room inside the milking parlor, the existing 1,800-square-foot milking parlor, where activities would be up to 200 activities and no more than 100 people. In addition, there would be a windmill that would be relocated to the site, a 1,000-square-foot general-purpose building for storage and a couple of bathrooms, and then a multi-use area for staging, children's activities, overflow parking, gardens, and other uses such as that. The site is located on South Hygera Street, adjacent to the city of San Luis Obispo. The project is within the agricultural and commercial service land use categories, and I'll show in a minute where that dividing line is. It's located within the vicinity of Highway 101, which is to the west, and Napomo Creek, San Luis Obispo Creek. And there's agriculture and scattered residences to the south, west, and east. And then to the north is the city of San Luis Obispo with some more intense uses, such as industrial out to the northeast and a parking area, actually storage facility to the north. The site is divided. The Octagon Barn and Milking Parlor and what's called the Calf Barn are located on the ag portion. And then there's a land use category boundary line and property in the commercial service. The historic location of the Octagon Barn and the is on the agricultural land use category. The Octagon Barn, the Milking Parlor, and the Calf Barn. And this is on what's called the Hayashi property, which is the underlying property owner. The commercial service area is intended to be overflow parking as well as some of those multi-use area activities, and that's on Caltrans property. And again, the site plan just shows the Octagon Barn, Milking Parlor, kind of the core of the activity in this area. And then the leased area for Caltrans, which is on this side. Again, the primary project components are the Octagon Barn, the Milking Parlor, the General Purpose Building, the Perimeter Trail, and the Windmill. And we'll go through those their locations really quick. The Octagon Barn is located here. Proposed activities and events would include community gathering places, an educational resource. It would be used for weddings and other events such as that. Again, it's 5,000 square feet, and it's limited to 100 events of up to 200 people. And this is just a photo taken from the Caltrans property of the Milking Parlor on the left and the Octagon Barn on the right. Here's the Milking Parlor. It's approximately 1,800 square feet. It would serve as an agricultural museum, classroom space, and community room. The proposal is for interior upgrades to this building, and activities would include up to 200 activities of no more than 100 people. And some of these types of activities would include community group meetings, docent tours, and retreats. Again, just showing kind of a drawing of the exterior and interior of the Milking Parlor. The general purpose building is located here. It's approximately 1,000 square feet. The use will be storage four bathroom stalls, as well as a shelter. And this is a general drawing of that building. And again, the shelter is kind of an outdoor lean-to for folks to kind of just take shelter from the weather. There's also a perimeter trail that's proposed all the way around the site with benches and primarily decomposed granite. There's a windmill that's proposed to be relocated to the site here. And this is a photo of the site from South Higuera Street showing, again, the octagon barn and the milking parlor. There's also an isolated wetland on the site, which by isolated essentially means it's not connected to any other waterways. The project includes a widening of South Higuera Street to include a southbound left turn lane, and the widening may impact this isolated riparian wetland and vegetation in there. So the conditions include mitigation in the form of a revegetation and restoration plan, replanting of any removed black walnut trees that could be impacted, and biologist presence during grading. There's also been a proposal for a secondary entrance from the site out to a future extension of Buckley Road. There's one initial access to the site from South Higuera, which is located here. And again, the future second access to South Higuera would be to the future extension of Buckley Road. This has been accepted by County Public Works and CAL FIRE. Staff has recommended approval of the project and approval of the CUP based on the findings listed in Exhibit A and the conditions in Exhibit B, and adoption of the negative declaration in accordance with CEQA. You also have before you a memo with revised conditions. County Council had suggested a number of minor revisions to the findings and conditions of approval, and we can go through those one by one, or we can just open it up for discussion.
Why don't we do that when we actually get to commission discussion about those findings and conditions?
And that concludes staff's presentation.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Pedrotti. Before applicant presentation and public comment, do commissioners have any initial questions for staff? Okay. Does the applicant wish to make a presentation at this time?
Yes, good morning, Chairman O'Grady and members of the Planning Commission. My name is Bob Hill, and it's an honor and my pleasure to serve our community as the Executive Director of the Land Conservancy of San Luis Obispo County. Before I go too much further, I thought I would take just a brief moment to talk a little bit about what the Land Conservancy does. We're a nonprofit corporation in California, and articles of incorporation were filed in May of 1984. Since that time, we've protected over 14,000 acres of land throughout San Luis Obispo County that's under our watch now, and restored miles of creeks and other restoration projects. Our mission, succinct and simple, through voluntary collaborative measures, we work to permanently protect and enhance lands having agricultural, scenic, biological, and cultural values. When I think of the Octagon Barn Project, I find myself reflecting back on the mission and thinking, my gosh, every component of our mission is encapsulated in this project. We have certainly the agricultural history, the outstanding dairying history, which we wish to celebrate and emphasize at the site, the scenic value from Highway 101 in South Higuera in the community gateway coming into the city of San Luis Obispo, clearly visible from Highway 101, a scenic landmark, something that's a distinct feature that helps our sense of place and distinct community character. In terms of biological values, Mr. Pedrotti mentioned the isolated wetland, which we also hope to emphasize and allow for interpretive possibilities there. There are very few places where the public can go and see a functioning wetland. And lastly, the cultural aspects are first and foremost. The Octagon Barn has been touched by many, many people over the years, whether it be the Swiss-Italian dairy farmers, whether it be the Portuguese farmers, whether it be the Chinese who worked in the labor camps for those groups, whether it be the Japanese farmers later on. So you see we have a polyethnic story here, a multicultural story as well, as the deep agricultural heritage that is so important to the San Luis Obispo County. So we're excited about the project, in particular because what we have before you today is our proposal and our vision to bring the project into the future, to transition out of what has been the restoration rehabilitation phase that we've embarked upon over the last 15 years to actually restore the Octagon Barn from decay and near collapse to something that can be a vital community hub, a place that people from throughout San Luis Obispo County can come and to congregate, to learn about our agricultural and dairying history, to learn about the Land Conservancy and our mission and what we do. In particular, what we find is that the Octagon Barn, both geographically and because of what it is, serves a very important role in bridging gaps between the country and the city, between people who live out in the countryside and people who live in the city. And too often we find that those kinds of communities are divided, and the Octagon Barn is a common ground, a place where people from the country and from the city can come and be together and understand what it's like to live in San Luis Obispo and why we live in a unique and important place. So with that, I'd like to introduce B.K. Richard. He's one of our board trustees. And ostensibly, B.K. has been a full-time project manager for several years on this project on a volunteer basis. So I applaud his efforts. And then lastly, before inviting him up, I'd like to thank staff, Brian Pedrotti and Cammie Griffin and County Council for your outstanding help and support on the project as well. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Hill.
Chairman O'Grady and commissioners, Brian, could you cue some slides there for me?
Would you please state your name for the record?
My name is B.K. Richard. I'm Thank on the Board of Trustees of the Land Conservancy, and as Bob indicated, I've been working to push the barn forward as a community asset. I just wanted to add just a few things to what Bob said and remind you of how long this process has taken. This is truly a community project starting in the late 90s when the Octagon Barn was collapsing and literally hundreds of people and thousands of dollars have been used. If you could just skip ahead to the next and then the next. There, just one back. There we go. The picture on the upper right is shows really the state of the barn when the Land Conservancy intervened to try to restore the barn, and we really successfully completed that in the late around 2008. Since that time, we've been working now to bring the barn forward to the community as an asset. Next chart, please. We think the barn really has four important dimensions to it. As Bob was discussing, the agricultural heritage and history of the barn and its ability to express that is vital. But it's also a unique architectural landmark here. We think it really will become an icon of the county. We see it having a recreational purpose by connecting to bike trails, and certainly an educational purpose as we use the site for interpretive reasons. Next slide. I just wanted to amplify a couple things that Brian was saying. One is that our financial goals for the barn are basically to break even. We're a nonprofit, and we don't intend to try to make a profit. But part of the agreements going forward will be for the Land Conservancy to maintain the site and all aspects of the site. So our business model requires enough revenue potential for that purpose. We also are emphasizing kind of the all-volunteer character here. This is really a community project. Practically everything that has been done or will be done by volunteers under the auspices of the Land Conservancy. The pictures also are a reminder of some aspects of the project that may not have come out before. On the left side, you can see the beauty of the interior of the barn. We think that magnificent space will be a really attractive thing for lots of different kinds of activities and events. Bringing people there, as Bob was saying, bringing people together. And in the lower right, many of you know we light the barn in the winter. Again, it really emphasizes the iconic character of the barn. The next slide. One back. Again, to reemphasize the partnerships we've had, we've really touched all of the really usual suspects in the community who have given something to us in helping us move forward. I'd like to point out particularly County Parks and our partnership with County Parks, which is still in development, but their support for our project as an asset to the county and the county in general has been vital. The Forbes Family Foundation has also been essential. Their grant actually was the thing that enabled us to go through the relatively arduous process of preparing for this CUP application. And then Caltrans, Westland Engineering, Utility Telephone, and the Hayashis have all given generously in one form or another to also propel us forward with lots of help and professional support. Last chart. I'd also like to take the opportunity to acknowledge the committee. This is an activity primarily led by board members of the Land Conservancy and other leading community members listed here on the left, but also, again, to acknowledge the hundreds of volunteers and donors who've helped us get to this point. It's been a long haul. And, of course, the hundreds of Land Conservancy members who have really supported the organization as a whole. And with that, I'll stop. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Richard. Any other applicant speakers? Okay. At this time, I would open public comment. And just a few rules of the road. Speakers, please state your name when you come to the podium. And if you would also say where you live, that's not a requirement. It's entirely at your option, but the commission requests that you do that. Sometimes it's helpful for us to consider the item and the background for your comments. Speakers are limited to 3 minutes. We do have quite a few speaker slips this morning. And so as you listen to speakers who precede you, if your remarks are the same as theirs, in order to expedite matters, please consider that you could just say you agree with comments from the preceding speaker. But that's really up to you. I think those are all of the rules. What I will do is to, and I've also tried to arrange the speaker slips in the order in which I have received them. So I will announce an initial speaker and then the name of a speaker on deck, and if that speaker would either come up to the front row or to the second podium, that would also help to expedite things. So the first speaker is Dan Carpenter, followed by Robert Davis on deck.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and
Good
Commissioners.
Morning.
My name is Dan Carpenter. I live in San Luis Obispo. And I'm during the day, I wear lots of different hats, but today I'm here representing the History Center of San Luis Obispo County, which I'm a longtime volunteer and currently their finance director. And I'm also representing my family of six generations of native to San Luis Obispo, over 150 years. My family has a story that has been told to me, like many other families in this community. We need to preserve those regarding our rich dairy farming history. It's very important to the community, and I hope that this project will do that. I encourage you to approve this active use permit for the barn and the surrounding property, as that will help further the education and the understanding to the community about our rich past. My grandparents and great-grandparents, they were Portuguese, were very active in the dairy farming business in San Luis. I was fortunate to be able to hear it firsthand. Many people from this generation on will not be able to. I can assure you, as a History Center representative, that we will be a very active partner in this endeavor as it moves forward. We have offered our resources and extensive archival collections to the Land Conservancy to proceed with their exhibits as they move forward if this is approved. So on behalf of my ancestors, the residents of the community, and future generations, I thank you for your consideration and encourage your positive support.
Thank you, Mr. Carpenter. Next speaker, Robert Davis, followed by Curtis Black.
Good morning. My name is Robert Davis. I live in Morro Bay, and I'm president of the San Luis Obispo Bicycle Club. I'm speaking today on behalf of the 650 members of our club in support of developing the Octagon Barn as presented by the Land Conservancy. The barn will be a valuable addition to the bicycling community as a gathering place to start bike rides. Our club members ride every day of the year from various places in the county, such as the Arroyo Grande Bandstand, Meadow Park, and the Atascadero Zoo. The Octagon Barn will be a wonderful new addition as a starting point for dozens of rides every year. The barn will also become a major hub of activity for the hundreds of people who ride the Bob Jones Trail. The location is perfectly located for easy access to the completed trail. The existing parking lot at Ontario Road is full every weekend with families who come to ride on the section of trail that has already been built. The barn will provide additional access to the trail as it is completed. On behalf of the Bicycle Club, I ask you to approve the permit. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Davis. Next speaker, Curtis Black, followed by Mike DeMilo.
Good morning, Chair O'Grady and members of the Planning Commission. I'm your County Parks Deputy Director. I live in Atascadero. And I'm proud, County Parks is proud to be partnering with the Land Conservancy of San Luis Obispo with this outstanding project for the community. Our mission in County Parks, in part, is to provide recreational opportunities while preserving natural, cultural, and historical resources. Also, we have board policy that directs County Parks to work in partnership with nonprofit groups and community groups in providing recreational opportunities. We find that this project it does very well in meeting both our mission and the board's direction. This project will provide a museum to secure and display our agricultural heritage, and it'll also benefit and enhance our Bob Jones Trail, arguably one of the more popular trails in the whole Central Coast. It'll provide space and facilities for a trailhead, and it'll provide ongoing public-serving amenities, such as restrooms and the maintenance for those facilities. In that this project meets these goals of County Parks, we urge the Planning Commission to approve this conditional use permit as presented by staff.
Thank you, Mr. Black. Next speaker is Mike DeMilo, followed by Terry Orton.
Good morning. My name is Mike DeMilo. I've been a resident of the city of San Luis Obispo since 1978. Thank you for the opportunity to speak this morning. I'd like to just briefly spotlight the important role that the Octagon Barn and Milking Parlor could play as an educational center for our county's schools. As you may be aware, our local teachers are mandated by state educational content standards to teach about local history, agriculture, and land use. Just as a brief example, our third graders are supposed to be tracing the ways in which people have used natural resources of the local region. So the Octagon Barn and Milking Parlor could become a vibrant learning center with exhibits, demonstrations, and hands-on activities that actually support the educational mandates that our teachers are working with in schools. Countywide, there are about 35,000 students within a 45-minute bus ride of the Octagon Barn and Milking Parlor. So given the opportunity, I think a lot of local schools would use the site as an educational supplement, and it would be a terrific asset to them. And maybe most importantly, the Octagon Barn and Milking Parlor would showcase the importance of agriculture in San Luis Obispo County, both past, present, and future. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Mr. DeMilo. Next speaker, Terry Orton. Okay. Yes, so you are. Thank you for that reminder. The next speaker is Paul Mechik, I believe, followed by Jessica Berry on deck.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Commissioners. My name is Paul Mechik, and I'm President of the Board of Directors of the San Luis Obispo International Film Festival. And I'm really grateful to have the opportunity today to speak in favor of the Octagon Barn Project. Most people think of the film festival as primarily supporting the art of independent film, but in doing so, we partner with many local nonprofits in the area. Just during the past year, we've partnered with the Women's Legacy Fund, with Jack's Helping Hand, with Rotary and their End Polio Now campaign, Friends of Hearst Castle, San Luis Obispo Child Abuse Prevention Council, Autism Speaks, and Festival Mosaic. And we've done had these partnerships at what are mostly what we like to call non-traditional venues for film, things like wineries and the barn at San Margarita Ranch are just a couple of examples. And one of our strengths of the film festival is showing documentaries about issues that are important to the community, and many that we have submitted to the festival have deal with environmental issues. So we think this would be particularly appropriate in this venue at the Octagon Barn. So the film festival looks forward to partnering in the future with the Land Conservancy regarding the use of the Octagon Barn as a venue for films dealing with not only environmental issues, but also the important issues of the day facing the community. And the film festival urges you to approve the CUP for the Octagon Barn. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Mechik. Next speaker, Jessica Berry, followed by Eric Justison. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you. My name is Jessica Berry. I'm with the San Luis Obispo Council of Governments. We are primarily a regional transportation planning and funding organization. We also urge you to support the staff recommendation and approve the conditional use permit for the Octagon Barn. We've long seen this site as a staging area for the Bob Jones Trail. We have we are a partner in funding the first the northern segment of that trail. And we work closely with the city of San Luis Obispo as well as the county staff on the segments further north connecting up to the city of San Luis Obispo. And we see this as an important component, a connection for a regional bike facility in our county. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Berry. Next speaker, Eric Justison, followed by Joy Fitzhugh.
Good morning, Chair O'Grady, members of the commission. I'm Eric Justison with RRM Design Group. And I'm here to speak in favor of the staff recommendation and the CUP for the Octagonal Barn. This is just one of the gems of our county. It's such a phenomenal historical landmark. And I think as you've seen over the last 15 years or so, the Land Conservancy, which is, you know, by far one of the greatest conservation organizations that we have, has really taken great care of this resource and has done some very careful planning to the future use of it. We've had the opportunity and pleasure to help them along the way, and I'd just like to say that once in a great while we have an opportunity to come together like this in a community to support such a fantastic resource and turn it into a community event center, a gathering place that celebrates our history, our culture, helps educate our future generations, and preserves the best of what makes this county so special. So I hope you can approve this use permit, and thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Justison. Next speaker, Joy Fitzhugh, and that looks like my last speaker slip on item one.
Good morning, Joy Fitzhugh, San Luis Obispo County Farm Bureau, and thank you for this opportunity to speak before you. Hopefully you received a copy of the letter that I sent previously, and I think basically I can echo every prior speaker that we've had this morning, and hopefully you will approve
this project. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Ms. Fitzhugh. Okay, I don't have any more speaker slips, so I will close public comment, bring it back to the commission for deliberation. This item is in District 3, so Commissioner Christensen, would you like to lead off?
Yes, I will. I, as a longtime resident of San Luis Obispo, the city of San Luis Obispo, and a 6.5-year veteran of the San Luis Obispo City Planning Commission, I certainly have been and am aware of the Octagon Barn Project, and, of course, I'm very supportive. I really appreciate the staff's decision to continue this item from the February Planning Commission meeting so they could work a little bit longer on clarifying some of the issues in the staff report and answering some questions. I had a large number of them at the time, and I especially appreciate staff's and county council's revised conditions and findings, because I think they really do address all of the questions and concerns I had. So I have one tiny little question just out of curiosity's sake, and then other than that, I'm ready to make a motion for approval. So I know you have a few other things that you might want to ask, but I'm just
letting you know. Thank you for realizing that.
You know, my goal to, you know, be efficient in meetings. So my only question was really one about that comes from the page 1-51 of the staff report, the environmental determination, and it has to do with the public services utilities analysis, and it says that it's going to have a cumulative effect on police and fire protection and on schools. And I understand the cumulative effect on police and fire, but I don't really understand the effect on schools, and is this project going to have to pay fees to the schools? That's my only question.
Brian Pedrati, staff planner. In general, when we look at public services and utilities, we do look at the fire and the public facility. I guess I'm not clear on whether or not this project would be paying any type of school fees. They're, I believe, wrapped up in public facility fees, but perhaps.
Are they just all lumped together, or
no? You'd pay the school fee to the school district, and I don't think they would be required to pay school fees.
Yeah, so this is just boilerplate language,
it
more or less.
It probably is just boilerplate.
Okay. Do you want to make certain?
Yeah.
Commission. Yeah, you can talk about that. Yeah. Okay, that was my only concern. So thank you.
Okay. Commissioner Toppe.
I too think that this is a good project, but I think there are just a couple of questions that have to do with its execution that are worth exploring further. There's going to be one. It has to do with amplified noise, amplified sound. In other words, noise. You did an acoustical study as part of the mitigated negative declaration, and I just wondered, how would any amplified noise be controlled? We have standards that presently exist in our ordinance, but I thought those ought to be identified for the record, because there is a residential suburban neighborhood immediately adjacent. We pay a lot of attention to amplified noise when it comes to ag areas which have no houses nearby. So in this particular case, I think I would ask, how will this be managed over time so that in order to avoid any potential conflicts down the line?
The Brian Pedrati, the acoustical analysis did identify amplified sound. It identified some of the uses around the property, including residences. It didn't identify that there would be potentially any significant impacts based on the distance and or topographic shielding of the properties nearby. Over time, the conditional use permit will have conditions in it, and will be required to meet those conditions. And we do have a separate condition, number, I believe it's 49, actually perhaps 51. It is number 49, which identifies a reevaluation of the conditional use permit, as well as condition 52, indicating that failure to comply with the conditions could result in enforcement action by the Department of Planning and Building. So over time, the project will be looked at in the future, and it'll be based on a kind of an enforcement procedure. But I'm not sure I'm getting to the heart of your question about
What are the current standards for hours of operation and
in the
amplified noise in the ordinance? I guess that's what I'm asking, and I'd like
the actual code requirement. I can take a look at the number of hours, but I believe it's 10 a.m. or 10 p.m. And
there aren't any operating hours set forth for this type of use in the ordinance. So what would apply relative to noise would be the standard requirements of, and I'm not sure what the dBs are or the hours are, that are just the standard requirements of the noise ordinance.
So you'd have to meet the property line requirement. There's a 65 decibel at the property line requirement.
Whatever the requirement is that would be the standard requirement would be the requirement. It isn't a special requirement like you see on wineries. That's a special standard that's set forth in the ordinance.
Well, if you want to look that up, I had a couple other relatively detailed questions, and I'll just ask those while you're looking it up. The other question I had was secondary access. Secondary access is to be provided eventually. The question is when, and I just wanted to get a clarification on that.
Glenn Marshall, County Public Works. Let me step in, Brian. Whenever Buckley Road goes through, and that's undetermined at this point, so I don't have a definitive answer for you.
Okay, so that's apparently the fire department is satisfied with that.
Yes, and if there is a problem in the future, I mean, the fire department and public works will definitely work out an alternative if it's necessary. At this point, we don't believe a secondary access is necessary, nor would it be safe.
Since the secondary access is an ordinance requirement, does there need to be a waiver?
No, I think that's a good question. I don't know if you need to – if it's a Cal Fire requirement.
I think it's in the temporary events
ordinance. It is in the temporary events ordinance to – would be way, I don't
it's,
even know.
It's in, we have it in their findings.
What?
Yeah.
J. Let's take a look at J.
I wasn't on the mic, but it's the finding J deals with the secondary access.
Cal Fire has approved this.
It's an exception, is what it is, not a waiver.
This circular sort of action, and one other project that I'm aware of, it was a winery project in North County. The problem with the secondary access, the true point of connection would be South Higuera. And then you'd need some sort of distance. Remember, we're putting in a center left turn lane, or they will be. We'll have to have some distance between there because then you'll have conflicting movements and adding additional points of connection to a high-speed arterial road like this would – it's just not
– I'm satisfied with the fire department's opinion on this. I just wanted the documents to – be correct, and so that's why I was looking at county council and asking if there needed to be a waiver, or does this constitute a waiver, as Commissioner Christensen has pointed out on J.
Thank you. This is Whitney McDonald from county council. I believe Commissioner Christensen is correct that the finding J would take care of that.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, and then I had one other question, and that has to do with the actual improvements to the structure. And I noticed when I was visiting with the trustees, Richard and Jenny, that that if you go in the structure, there's actually a very kind of a rumply old poured concrete floor, which is very bumpy. And the question then raised in my mind, and I mentioned it at the time, was how do you handle access for disabled people? This is a public venue to be, and it's going to be a you're actually it's used for people who come and go in wheelchairs and the like, and so that my question was, how do our conditions provide for that?
It wouldn't be our conditions. It would be the follow-up building permit. They're required by law to have accessibility, and when they get their building permit that's required to upgrade the building, that will be evaluated as part of that building permit.
So the SLO Conservancy can look forward to that issue being addressed as part of the building permit.
Right, and I think they've been in conversations with our building division for quite a while about what kinds of changes are going to have to happen to the building in order for it to be able to be used for the public.
Okay, that satisfies that issue as far as I'm concerned. I mean, it's basically part of the system, I gather, that takes care of that kind of access issue, internal access issue. Okay, and then I don't know, do we know how we're going to deal with noise as it relates to the neighbors?
Yes, the acoustical analysis identified a requirement of 65 decibels to be measured at the property line, and it identified that although the and this was between the daytime hours of 7 a.m. and 10 p.m. It did identify that although in some cases at the property line the decibel level would be higher, that at the residences located nearby the decibel level would be low enough that it would that the sound coming from the barn would be identifiable as music, but that actually the roadway noise on South Hagera Street would be louder.
Mm-hmm.
And so, at least for the residences closest, there would be no potential impact based on amplified noise from the barn.
Okay.
Mr. Pedrotti, is there anything in this application, this permit, that waives the requirements to comply with the noise ordinance?
There's no waiver, no.
Okay. Correct. So there have to be. So if there's a complaint by a resident and showing that it's greater than 65 dBA at the property line, then the applicant would have to take corrective measures in order to comply with that.
Correct.
Thank you.
Okay.
Commissioner Topping, does that conclude your questions?
That concludes my questions.
Okay. Commissioner Murphy is the next speaker.
So I guess when there's on the noise standards, the basic noise standards would apply, I assume, because of the adjoining residential land use category, so they'd be subject to the normal requirements at the property line, and that's what is addressed in the study.
Correct.
Then you kind of touched on here, I assume, because of the events they want to propose, that all the structures will be brought up to public facility standards. I don't know if that's in the current events. We worked on the events ordinance, and I don't think it's been adopted yet, but would the structures all have to be brought up to public facility standards for use as events facilities, or no? I'm specifically thinking of sprinklers.
I'm not sure of those exact standards, but they do have to do fire sprinklers, for instance. They're going to be needing to do ADA compliance for the doors. And so those will all need to be done prior to occupancy of the, for instance, the barn. And there will be some significant interior upgrades to the milking parlor as well.
Because when we work on the events ordinance, and I didn't look at the current one to refresh my memory what's in it or what's not, but I know the proposed ones, that was a big issue on any historic or existing buildings, that they be brought up to public facility standards if they're going to be used to have events or public events at them.
Yes, and I believe our building division's looking at those as public facility uses.
So. And the Bob Jones Trailhead, that is not mentioned in the project description. Are we not approving the use of this property for a trailhead at this point in time? I see there's a separate EIR mentioned, so is that going to be a separate permitting process down the road?
That's correct. It's not a part of this project. We evaluated it on a cumulative basis in the negative declaration, including there's a couple sections, one in the transportation section, and then under the mandatory findings, we talk about cumulative analysis. But it is not a part, and they would need to come back at some future date and revise the CUP or other process to add the Bob Jones Trailhead once the EIR was certified for the overall Bob Jones Trail.
Commissioner Murphy, just to follow up on that, doesn't CEQA require that reasonably foreseeable projects, that the impacts of reasonably foreseeable projects be considered in any environmental evaluation, even a negative DEC?
That's correct.
Okay. If that's the case, then I thought you just said that this project is not considering the impacts of the Bob Jones Trail.
I said it was. It did consider those impacts. The traffic analysis did include a cumulative analysis of the Bob Jones Trail, and then the negative declaration did include a discussion of not only the Bob Jones Trail, the future trailhead, but also the impact of the two-lot parcel map that was on the Hayashi property to the south. So there has been a cumulative discussion in the negative declaration.
Okay. Thank you.
And then, so the events, we've got kind of a two-part CUP, one's addressing a museum on agricultural property and the other addressing the events themselves. So if we were looking at just the museum, they've requested X number of events at the museum. Would that be a normal type of condition or approval that we'd set forth on a museum, on a, say, a ranch and had a small museum? We would limit the number of special events that are allowed there as opposed to day-to-day operations?
It could be. It'd be on a case-by-case basis. Obviously, this project is fairly unique in the county, and so some of the conditions have been crafted in a unique and in a case-by-case base way.
And then separately, you're looking at strictly at temporary events and setting the limitations on the property for having special events or temporary events there.
Right. And one of the, we have the revised findings and conditions, and one of the more significant revisions is that there was no condition identifying that the 200-person events and 100-person events would not occur at the same time. And so that has been added to ensure that we don't have two of those events happening at once, which would have cumulative impacts for traffic and other environmental impacts.
I guess last, my only little concern is that, we're approving 300 events a year for this property. And I know when we discussed events on ag or rural lands previously during events, we were dealing with fives and tens and twenties, and this is a very intense.
You got to say this.
I recognize the location of the properties, not out in the middle of Shandon or something like that. It's up against the city limits. I don't know where the city limits are, but I suspect they're very close by, and it's on a collector, a main road, so it's not the same situation. But it is a very intense use, which will be further magnified once we add the Bob Jones Trail to it. So I'm a little concerned over the number of events that we're approving here today. It just seems like that's a lot of events.
Well, it's a museum. Right. If you talk about things like everything from school visits mm-hmm. to, what you consider a kind of classic events, retreats or whatever, you need to use it. Mm. And I mean, I don't know if you guys are very familiar with this area, but, you know, it's South Higuera. It's a busy street. It's
right,
part of the city.
Right.
It's, we're not talking about a place out in the middle of, you know, West Paso or anything. If you're not going to put a place like this here, you're not going to put it anywhere. And truly, the Octagon Barn is a unique and very special location that needs to have all kinds of different events, and that's why there's that number, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I recognize it is a unique location, and there it is, heavily traveled road. It's right on the edge of the city, so I'm just thinking down the road of other projects that come along, whether or not this, you know, large of numbers going to be brought up. Somebody else pointing to, okay, you permitted 300 here, do we want 50 or 60?
This is a very unique project, Commissioner Murphy. We're not going to, I mean, there might be another something else that's special that comes along, but you don't have an Octagon Barn. That doesn't provide a precedent for anything else. It's the Octagon Barn. They've been working on this for 14 years. They got another 12 years to go. You know, I just really, yeah.
I'm just voicing, you know, some concern.
I can understand your
voice, hear anybody
and
else.
I'm answering you.
I'm the only one voicing that concern, so I'm the lone voice in the wilderness.
No, you're not.
But anyway,
I just wanted
to broach that issue because it seemed to be one of the bigger issues because of the intensity of the use of the property.
Right.
But it is, one of the issues is always neighbors. There's not a lot of neighbors, which is great. There's a few residences that are quite a ways away, and they are on ag properties, as most of them. I think almost all of them are.
Right.
Until you go north into the city. So,
Commissioner Murphy, could I contribute
to that a little bit?
Mr. Pedrotti, if, let's say, an application was submitted for a performing arts center, say, that would be a public assembly building. Is that correct by definition?
I would assume so.
Yeah. Okay. So, and events are held in performing arts centers. Do the ordinances have any requirements for limiting the number of events in performing arts centers, or is it just inherent that there's going to be events and they're going to vary from year to year, and the ordinance really has nothing to say about it because it's a performing arts center?
If you're a performing arts center, then it falls within a public assembly use in our code, and I don't believe there's a limitation on the number of events. It would be essentially that's your use, and you would be still evaluated for the California Environmental Quality Act, and perhaps there would be restrictions placed on number of events if necessary. But from a code standpoint, I don't believe that there is a limitation on number of events.
Okay, so the Octagon Barn, which is the events center part of this project, that's what that is, right? So I think what you just said about a performing arts center, wouldn't it also be true for the Octagon Barn Event Center?
Well, in staff's review, we identified, as the staff report describes, that the site is the primary use is as a agricultural and historical museum, and that the events are, although a big focus of the site, they are still accessory to what the primary use is, and that's as an agricultural site, museum, a historic site, and therefore we felt appropriate that in our review that it is looked at as that use and that the events are looked at under the temporary events ordinance.
And even though the milking parlor is the museum part and that's phase two, which may never get built, you're still saying that's the primary use?
Well, the entire what we've identified in the report is that the entire site is the use, because the Octagon Barn itself, as the structures themselves and the grounds, are part of the museum. And so the milking parlor represents maybe the indoor part of the museum where you have some display items. But we've described the use as the site, and that is the museum.
Okay, I need to give this back to Commissioner Murphy, but I may follow up on that point when it's my turn.
Well, yeah, and that kind of gets to the fine point, but they do in the findings talk about in the libraries and museums that the Octagon Barn site is part of the museum, and I think I think I can agree with that concept that the entire property is really part of the museum, not just the milking parlor, because the public facilities or assembly is not allowed on ag. That became an issue, but I think the whole project to me is a museum, I think I can agree with that. And then we get to the events. And temporary events, they're allowed in either zoning, so there's no issue there. And clearly, if we said this is a public assembly building, then we'd have a problem. But the fact that it's a museum on ag ground, it has to be an ag museum, however, and that's what it is. So so I think I'm okay with the compliance with the ordinance. This is in terms of the zoning and the land uses, the way it's written up and the way the findings discuss the uses of the octagon barn as part of the library and the museum and not just as a public facility. So I think that's the only comments I've got at this point.
Ah, okay. Commissioner Irving.
Thank you. I will echo Commissioner Christensen's comments and that the staff report has changed from February really answered most of my questions, as did the revised findings we got yesterday. I would like to follow up just on one question regarding the fees that Commissioner Christensen brought up. Will the construction of the storage shed trigger the need for school fees to be paid, and or will the remodeling of any of the buildings further for ADA compliance and things of that sort require payment of school fees? And if it does, is it within our power to exempt the project from such fees, since it's going to be used for museums and school tours?
I'll just jump in there real quick. This is Whitney McDonald from the County Council. I have to admit, I'm not familiar with the intricacies of the school fee ordinance, essentially. It's not our ordinance. We don't collect the fees, and we wouldn't be able to exempt them. And unfortunately, I can't answer whether or not under the codes, whether or not this project would be required to pay them or not.
Thank you. And Ms. Carroll, do you have anything to add to that, or anyone?
No, I don't.
Okay. Well, matter of record, I would say I'd like to make sure that it's exempt from it, but if we can't do anything about it, we can't. So that's all. And my questions have been answered. Thank you.
Commissioner Topping.
Yeah, one last question, and that has to do with the wetland. This is near San Luis Creek, and I guess my question is, is there a flood hazard overlay on this property? And if so, where would it be? Is it just the wetland?
Yes, it says right there.
No, it's not just the wetland. Portions of the property are within the 100-year flood area. And I don't
Has
I don't
that
have
been
a graphic
stated in
that.
The in the report someplace?
Yeah, in the report on page 1-10, no of the additional buildings are proposed within the flood hazard area. But we identify that future development, including the reconstruction of the milking parlor, would need to be brought into compliance with the flood hazard zone.
Okay.
So that might involve some additional construction with that rehabilitation.
Okay. I have to say this. The purpose of a planning commission, I believe, is to ask questions that to take care of loose ends, and so doesn't necessarily reflect, just because we're asking questions, doesn't necessarily reflect any particular negativity towards the project. The reason I'm asking questions as one commissioner is because these loose ends can come back to bite a project down the line, and I just wanted to say that for the record, because this particular project is obviously a labor of love, and has great enthusiasm within the community. We just don't want it to love it to the point where it goes out the door without the proper precautions, and that's the reason I was asking questions.
Okay, I think that was well said, and I would echo that, regardless of the worthiness of a project, and I certainly think this one is worthy. It's important to me as a representative of the entire county to make sure that any project that comes along, that I understand how it reflects compliance with our laws. And so several of my questions that I'll be asking now are from that perspective. So, Mr. Pedrotti, The octagon barn on page 1-2 of your report says that the restored barn. Has this barn already been restored?
Yes, it has been. There are, and perhaps the applicant can speak to some of the details of that, but it's listed on as a historic site in the San Luis Obispo area plan. And there was a historical resources impact analysis report done, which identified that the Octobarn was a historical resource and eligible for listing in the National Register. The project elements were, and all the restoration, as I understand, conforms to the Secretary of Interior standards for treatment of historic properties with guidelines, et cetera, et cetera. But as far as the details of that restoration and what stage that's in, I would defer to the applicant, but I understand it's almost nearly complete, if not complete.
Okay.
They do need to provide fires for safety, fire sprinkler system.
So that's yet to be done, is that correct?
Yes.
And make it into a building that provides the level of safety necessary for a public assembly building.
Correct.
And in connection with the potential historic listing of this structure, I'm generally familiar with some of those requirements, and I just want to be sure that anything that we do here in this CUP does not prevent possible future accomplishment of listing on a historic register. Has that been researched? To be sure that, like, the number of people we're allowing in here and the number of events or anything else might compromise that ability?
A lot of those items and the proposed project itself was looked at in the historical, called a Historical Resources Impact Analysis Report. And there were, as far as I recall, there were no identifications that things that they were doing would
So adding sprinkler piping and sprinkler heads wouldn't compromise the structure to prevent it from being listed.
Correct. And I think a lot of the proposal has been based on some of those comments and recommendations.
Okay. Also on page 1-2 of your report, there's a general purpose building and multi-use areas. It does say that it's proposed that the general purpose building be used for storage. What else can it be used for? Or let me put it this way, can it be used, does it have to comply with Table 2-2 uses? I mean, you can't put a laboratory in there, can you?
Because it's part of the project description as a storage building and the bathrooms, that's the use that's proposed.
Okay.
So if they wanted to propose a different use,
they'd have to come back.
Go back through.
Correct. And the same could be said then for the multi-use areas.
That's correct.
Okay. Okay. We talked briefly a little bit earlier about the future trailhead, and you said that transportation impacts had been assessed and accounted for. What about the restrooms? When I read the report, I think it just talked about the events and the numbers of people that were proposed there, and that the bathroom requirements were calculated based on that, but I don't recall it saying anything about the trailhead.
The bathrooms were associated with the events. I think there were six proposed, but because the Bob Jones Trail is not a part, at the time that the trailhead does become a part of the project, that would be reevaluated and perhaps bathrooms would be added at that time.
Okay, I do see now on page 1-4, no clear standard exists for the addition of the future trailhead, but the county building division suggested an additional male-female bathroom. So that's going to be reassessed later then, is that
correct?
Okay.
Correct.
Okay. About water, I didn't see any written commitment. You talk about this off-site well, but I didn't see any evidence of a commitment to provide that water. And oftentimes in these staff reports on these projects, the evidence showing that, by God, there is going to be water available, that there's a will serve letter or some other written document committing whoever's providing the water. Do you have something like that from the applicant, or is this just a discussion?
I don't believe we have that in the file. Perhaps they have provided that to Environmental Health. But our understanding was that they have actually a shared system in place. And so at the time of building permit, obviously, they would need to provide that information and ensure that they have the water.
Since the applicant is here, perhaps it would be helpful to hear from the applicant. Staff's approach has been to say that the site is a museum. Where in the ordinance can you do that? Because it seemed to me when I read the ordinances that you had to look at the individual structures and say what the uses were and then determine whether those were appropriate. And if not, then maybe you had to do a waiver or something else.
I'm not sure there it's specified in the ordinance that particular designation or that that designation, I guess. On a normal basis, sometimes we would look at structures themselves as the use. Obviously, the residence is a use. And that would be tied to a structure. In this case, we felt it was appropriate based on the site. It's really on a case by case basis on something like this because it's particularly unique, and perhaps we may not have another site in the county that's quite like this in terms of identifying the site as the use. But in this case, we felt it was quite appropriate. Based on the historical boundary of the property, the structures themselves, and so we felt that okay. The event center was.
And I don't quarrel with that at all in this case. But let me just, and maybe it's a roundabout way, but I think it'll become clear. If this parcel were larger and there were still going to be ag activities on the parcel, would your approach be the same then? I mean, the ag activities could coexist with this portion of the parcel, a portion of the site that is a museum and event center, and considered the whole that portion of the site as a museum, and therefore permittable.
Perhaps I hate to be gray about it. But
okay.
I think
well, here's my concern. I mean, I don't know how many parcels there are out there that are ag that have multiple structures, accessory structures, barns, what have you, and I can get some old farm implements, put them in one structure, put up a couple of signs, and call it a museum, and then the other barn, it can be an event center. So using the same rationale, I think, is what you just articulated. So that's my concern. How do we, I think most folks would say we don't want to open the door to that. So how do we, if we approve this on that basis, how do we not approve, use the same rationale if another applicant comes to us and says they'd like to do something similar?
Well, I would say that, anybody could use that same rationale depending on that particular scenario, but would it be reasonable? And I think that in this case, it is reasonable for this site that we could use that rationale here. And throwing up, a couple farm implements or something like that on another site, perhaps that, that's not reasonable or it, it's obvious. So I think that...
So they would still, that applicant would still have to come to the commission for a CUP, and then the commission would use its judgment like we are in this case, right? So So there's no precedent setting here.
I think that is the point, because that's probably been done where people have opened up little museums on their ranch trying to get some trail tourist or something to stop in, and then it comes to us, and obviously depending on the site and the location, there's going to be conditions of what's going to be allowed. That's why I said, okay, we're approving museum, but we're also saying the museum can have events, and then we're doing a separate event approval to cover even more events. So, and it's addressing exactly what you're talking about, but that's the purpose of the COP, is to place conditions on use based on the site. And
okay, well,
this is a high usage, I agree, for a museum. And
I just wanted to emphasize this for the record, that this commission is not intending to broaden this use of this rationale.
Yeah, Commissioner, I think there's some ambiguities in the ordinance, perhaps, but I think it's pretty well assured that this commission, at least, is going to ask as many questions, if not more, of anybody else that comes forward, and that there's going to be a thorough vetting process. So I have no concerns about that. My concerns were basically that we create a record that that allows for this project to thrive down the line. It's being a community project, and that doesn't have any Achilles heel type aspects to the record.
Mr. Pedrotti, on page 1-26, condition 52, it says all conditions of this approval run with the land and shall be strictly adhered to, etc. I don't recall.
Trying to stormwater quality plan is what that means.
Okay.
I can barely read it also. And that's just an ordinance requirement. They'll have to do it with submittal of any construction permits.
Okay, that's not for now. That's for later.
Exactly.
Okay. Okay, that concludes my questions. However, Commissioner Murphy, you have your light up.
Well, I just had a thought. This is on leased property, the ag land, leased in Hayashi's. I didn't see anything in the record regarding there. I assume they support the project since they're leasing them the property. I don't know what the conditions of the lease are, how it reads. It's probably not a traditional ag lease for farming, but I assume they're aware that their tenant is planning to have multiple events on the property of this type, and they're in support of that or in agreement.
Yeah, we have not received any written comments, but they were sign-ons on the original application.
Okay.
So we have consent of landowner for the application.
Yeah, obviously, if the lease didn't allow it, then it wouldn't happen anyway. All right.
Okay, seeing no other speaker lights on, I would ask Commissioner Christensen if she would like to make a motion on this application.
Sure. I'd like to go ahead and recommend that the commission, move that the commission recommend to the Board of Supervisors that they adopt the negative deck in accordance with the applicable provisions of the CEQA, Public Resources Code, Section 21000 et sec, and approve the conditional use permit DRC 2010-00053. Based on the findings listed in Exhibit A as revised and the conditions listed in Exhibit B as revised in the staff memo of May 10th, 2012.
Second.
Very good. We had a second. Okay. Is there any further discussion? Hearing none, Ramona, please call the roll.
Commissioner Christensen?
Aye.
Commissioner Irving?
Aye.
Commissioner Murphy?
Yes.
Commissioner Topping?
Yes.
Chairman O'Grady.
Yes. Motion passes 5-0. My congratulations to the applicant and their supporters. It's time for a break, so let's reconvene at 10 minutes, and that's about 10:42. I reconvene this hearing of the San Luis Obispo County Planning Commission. We're back in business looking at item number 2. So, Ramona, would you please introduce this item?
Hearing to consider a request by Harold Biagini for a tract map. County file number SUB 2009-00045. Supervisorial district number 2.
Thank you, Ramona.
City project manager.
You fooled me. Thank you, Ramona. Before we get to the staff report, I'd like to ask commissioners if they have any ex parte. Hearing none. Good morning, staff.
Good morning. Paul Sittig, County Planning.
Good morning, Paul.
Before us today is a tentative vesting tract map to split an existing 330.69-acre parcel. That's rural lands, land use category. There's an existing residence and one ag barn. The proposal is to split this into 160 acres and 170.69 acres. Each lot would have one building envelope of approximately 1 acre each. Identified here in red is the lot located south of Highway 41. Also split within the Estero planning area and the Salinas River planning areas, as seen here with the line that kind of goes up here. Also located 4 miles east of Moore Bay and 3.4 miles west of Atascadero. Again, looking at the site more in detail now, this is the proposed lot split line in the dashed blue, splitting the lot roughly evenly. But also, the coastal zone boundary located here, the existing residence is within the coastal zone. This is good, important to note because the coastal zone of the Estero area plan prohibits residential development within the coastal zone area. This is a 26-acre portion of the whole entire site. As such, the proposed building envelope on Lot 1 is located within the inland area, the Salinas River planning area. Lot 2 has the building envelope, again, identified in the black outline there. This is a building envelope on Lot 1 is around the existing barn. Lot 2 is on an open space, which I'll detail more here. This is the site again. Outline in red. Note the Moore Creek running through the property with blue. Also, these parallel lines that run diagonal through the site are PG&E easement, which prohibits development under this area. So that's another limiting factor. Add to that the slope. Also, there's another standard specifically to this lot in specific, limiting the lot size from future development, or future splits, such as this one. The minimum lot size is 160 acres. Thus, the proposed lot split of 160 and 170.69 acres is in compliance with this standard. With that, we bring ourselves to the site itself. This is the existing barn. The telephone poles run along Highway 41 here. The red line there is an approximation of where the building envelope would lie. It's not a great one, but it gives you the idea that the building envelope carries down from the highway down slope around the existing barn. Now, this area is existing use for ag purposes, and as such is currently disturbed. This is on site 2, or lot 2 rather. This is an area that is open. To the right here is a riparian corridor. As you'll be able to see, there's some light lines ahead of above that are the PG&E lines. So that's other prohibitions for development. So with that, we've placed the building envelope, or the building envelope was chosen by the applicant approximately 400 feet away from the riparian corridor upslope, on a lower slope, but not not completely flat. But this is, again, based on the constraints of the site, this was an ideal location for a building envelope. With that, there are some minor corrections based on some new information provided by both Caltrans and Public Works. This is a brief overview. I will now toggle over to the staff report itself to go into actual language. Here we are. In referrals, on page 2-5, the referrals include mention of a Department of Fish and Game referral sent out. We received comments, and actually staff discussed the project with U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service via email back in October. They provided standards for setbacks from the creek for California red-legged frog. Setbacks have been applied to the project. And also they are in support of a condition placed on the project for a future stream crossing to replace existing at-grade crossing. Again, this would be with future development for residences on Lot 2. Moving forward to pages 2-8, I believe. A new condition number 2. For existing development, verify that all existing development and uses are appropriately permitted. If the applicant is proposing to demolish any such structures, appropriate permits shall be required to do so. With this, there's a Public Works request to remove prior comments or conditions 2 and 3, replacing them with the new underlying language. Access shall be denied to parcels 1 and 2 from State Route 41, except at locations approved by Caltrans, and this shall be done by certificate and design on the map. That simplifies the language greatly there. There's more language clarifying under improvement plans 4B on page 2-9. Under the heading of sewer plan, county environmental health, colon, a complete on-site chemical analysis shall be submitted for the evaluation of each parcel created or as required. This is carried over from the prior, thank you for the correction. That should be under 4A rather. Sorry for the mislead there.
Actually can't read it.
Okay. So again, this is a water plan, county environmental health. A complete on-site chemical analysis shall be submitted for the evaluation for each of the parcels created or as required. This is carrying over from the original parcel map. This is a conditions that are included in the staff report itself. This is one of the conditions that was carried forward. Other ones do not apply, as some of them from the original parcel map refer to the flood hazard areas, and the building envelopes have been located in such a way to avoid flood hazards. So again, this is carrying over conditions from the original parcel map that created lots prior to this. Okay. Then again on page 2-9, under utilities, condition 10, this is, I believe, from Public Works provided additional language. Again, condition number 10 reads, gas lines shall be installed and service laterals stubbed to each lot unless the point of connection is not reasonably available. And with that, I believe that is... Oh, no, there's additional comments or conditions on under page 2-11 under additional map sheet, condition 15. This is letter E. A new letter E would read... A notice that at the time of application for construction permits, the applicants verified the access points slash driveways for which Caltrans encroachment permits were issued meet the current Caltrans encroachment permit design standards. In the event that work is required to bring the access points slash...
Yes, Mr. Tapping.
Yeah, I'd appreciate it if you could go back to the access conditions, that the revised language. I couldn't read it.
My apologies. I'll enlarge this. Jumped around.
It was condition 2, I think. Okay, and that's basically saying that Caltrans is to approve the access.
Correct. This is to prohibit future driveways from being placed as without proper approval by Caltrans.
Okay.
As this is a state highway.
Yeah, and then just the preceding red.
Yeah, back it up a little.
Wait a second. I'll leave it there for a second.
Yeah.
Unless
Paul, you don't have this already printed out for us, these revised conditions.
No, my apologies.
And we'll just leave this up so I can read it for a second, please.
Everything after math. Okay, thank you. Oh, where is this?
Glenn.
Oh, you've been asleep. Thank you.
Oh.
My question is by Mr. Marshall. Go ahead. Thank you.
Okay, and then on the existing development, there is some question about existing structures. Is that... Is that what that's saying?
This is to clarify the history of the development currently on site. Any development on the site that's currently there needs to be just verified that it meets all codes and standards as applicable to the buildings themselves.
I think I understand you. Could you just kind of take that condition too and say, paraphrase it, what it's supposed to mean?
This is to ensure that everything on site is... located and developed in such a way that it's adequate to meet past or current building codes, whichever apply to the buildings and uses.
So if you're going to leave buildings there, you would make some adjustments to bring them up to code, or code at the time, or
the code at the time typically.
Yeah. Okay.
And if there's something that was not permitted somewhere along the way,
they would
that
have to get it legalized.
Correct.
Okay, and that would be through working with the building department.
Correct.
Okay.
County Council would like to weigh in on this.
Actually, I have a somewhat related question, and I apologize for throwing it in at this moment. But I know there are building envelopes on each of the parcels. Do we have a condition limiting development to only within those parcels? I didn't see one in there, and I think that would probably just include future residential development as our code defines it.
There's no specific language requiring that. No, correct.
You're correct. I had the same question.
Perhaps we could just add a quick sentence to the condition one.
It would actually need to go into condition 15 and 16. I can find 16. Both the CCNRs and the additional map sheet.
Are we still doing questions?
Well, if they can't wait. I mean, if they're on the same subject matter, then fine. Otherwise, let's like to hear from the applicant.
Yeah. On the access, is it possible that Caltrans might just say no to future driveway encroachment permits?
It's possible, yes. There are currently two Caltrans permits on the site, one for each parcel, or one for each future parcel, rather. So it is possible that Caltrans would see that this is currently sufficient and adequate for future access to the site, but that is something that may also be require discussion with fire department at a time such that you propose future development. Okay. If you need secondary access, whatnot, that's, again, based on future design, development designs that are not provided to date.
Sure. I noticed, related question then is, do you have information that you could share with us as to where those access points are?
Yes.
Presently? The existing permitted access points.
Yes, there's a... I'm this arrow here. Caltrans encryption permit number 7. Correct.
Okay, thanks.
Paul, while you're there, on lot 2, the encroachment permit that comes in and shows the existing creek crossing, the proposed change from fish and game, that's the at-grade crossing?
There's one here, and there's also one, I believe, downstream. Wherever the applicant in the future proposes to build and use access, this is leaving it open for future improvements.
Okay.
And while you're there, is there a regulatory floodplain that covers Morrow Creek?
Yes, actually this is...
Could you show us where the limits are?
Yes, if you'll notice the dark blue line that's wide, on either side there's flanked by thinner black lines. That is the floodplain designation. As you see here, flood hazard line zone A.
That's the standard flood hazard area.
Correct.
Okay.
Commissioner Murphy has a slide out.
Yeah, I just want to follow up on this verification. Your existing structures have approved permits or you're in compliance. Is that an existing regulation ordinance or is that just a condition we're applying to projects?
This was a condition from the building department.
So it's not a standard requirement or regulation on all projects or all, say, lot splits that you would do this, or is it?
I could be misspeaking, but I believe track maps have a higher level of scrutiny to them versus a parcel map. So because of that, we're providing more scrutiny to the project as a whole.
Okay, but it is conditional, not necessarily a regulation or requirement that's always required to be done on every lot split.
Bill Robeson, County Planning. We're talking about the verification of permits?
Right.
Even when a building permit comes in, that it, on a non-discretionary permit, we try to make sure that the parcel that we're looking at is legal and up to date, so that there are we're not issuing permits on a piece of property that has illegal structures on it.
Okay.
So it runs across the board for us as far as this type of requirement.
Okay, so it's kind of a standard procedure to do that then.
Right.
Okay, let's hear from the applicant. Connie Biagini Spradling. I have a speaker slip.
We're going to write all future development shall be limited to building envelopes.
Chairman O'Grady and commissioners, good morning. It's almost afternoon, I believe, but thank you for allowing me to speak to you today. I'm Connie Biagini Spradling, and I'm fifth generation of the Central Coast Ranching family, and I live in Morro Bay, California. I'm here to represent my family in the proposed division of our ranch property located on Highway 41 in Morro Bay, California. My dad, Ed Biagini, and his brother, Harold, co-owned this property. Unfortunately, my dad passed away a little over 3 years ago. Now my sister, Tina, and I are the successors to my dad's property. The reason for the division of the property was for estate planning. My dad started the process, and regretfully, it wasn't finished before he passed away. We appreciate all the time and effort you and your staff have put into this project. We hope you will endorse the staff's recommendation on this matter before you. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Spradling. Also speaking for the applicant is Terry Orton.
Terry Orton, Orton Engineering. Well, as mentioned, the Biagini families owned this property for quite a while, like, say, five generations at this point. And we started quite a while with trying to go through and get this split, but there's been a lot that we've had to do to get to this particular stage. As mentioned, the heirs are trying to, and Harold are trying to, fulfill this dream of dividing the property into the two parcels. The couple things that I wanted to mention on things that had come up as questions, you know, that number two, the main part of that that I was seeing, since the structure itself has been there for quite a while, the main part of it seemed to me to be that they want to make sure that we get a permit if we have to demolish it or not. I also like to point out that we are intending to leave that structure in place as a grandfathered in structure at this time. And the building envelope is in case they, for some reason, can't use it or something like that in the future. And that building envelope was very carefully crafted along with the one for parcel two in the locations they were. We've got geologic information, archaeological information, and botanical information that have actually gone into siting the two locations that you see on the map. And the Caltrans issue, I feel reasonably comfortable that we won't have any problems with that, and the main reason is because I was involved. Also, that I'd like to thank staff. It was you can't believe how much time that we have spent trying to get this thing just right, so when it came before you that there'd be the least amount of problems available. And we'd therefore like to ask you if you'd please approve the split. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Orton. Commissioner Irving, did you have a question?
Sure, certainly.
Mr. Orton, the creek crossing was my question earlier that you just addressed. Is that narrow enough to cross with just a railroad car type bridge, or is that going to require something more than
probably that? Will be larger than a railroad car bridge, yes.
Okay. Having not been to the site, I was just curious.
Right.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Orton. I'd like to open a public comment, but it may just be a formality because I have no speaker slips for public comment, and if anyone would like to speak at public comment, now's the time. Okay, I'm going to close public comment and bring it back to the commission for deliberation. And Commissioner Topping, I believe this is just barely into your district from mine.
Yeah, just barely.
Next to mine.
I've driven by the site, and this looks like a very straightforward application. I think the bridge would be the primary interest in serving that lot two, and the access to lot one would be the point of concern from a traffic safety standpoint. Sounds to me like at least the latter is covered with the Caltrans language that's been added. I guess my question would be, what's the trigger for would the building permit? County Council has suggested that we add a reference to new construction going on lots building envelopes one and two. I think that's what we need to be sure and call them. The question would be, do we have language at all that references the need for a bridge to access building envelope two? Yeah, I think we do. And if not, could we add that as a heads up?
I thought I saw something in the staff report, but I don't know whether it made it to the commissions or not. So,
if I missed it, then my apologies, but I just want to make sure.
Oh, that's okay.
That we're covering the details as we are expected to do.
You bet. I know I saw a bridge reference in here somewhere.
Yes, there's a Paul City County staff, page 2-13, as at least one of the references. And there's throughout the initial study, there was quite a bit of discussion of the bridge in the biological section.
Can you give us, for example, reference other than the page? Is it Q, R, S,
apologies, yes. It's current. It's former letter R, current letter T, because of all the renumbering and whatnot. Also, bio-5 is a condition.
This is all biological. My question is just straightforward.
Dan, yeah.
Can you slow down a little bit, Paul, and let us find our place here?
Yes.
It's 2-13, and it's R.
It's R. To bridge this. Okay. There it is. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay. Bio 5. Okay.
And there's several other.
And that is slot 2, the eastern lot? Did I see that right on the map?
It says this is lot 2.
It does say that, but it rang up tilt.
Well, the way I read this is that the applicant has
That's
to
right.
check with all these different agencies
That's right.
if they provide a bridge. And the my question is, do we really mean if, or do we mean there shall be a bridge?
The issue then also comes into access through or approval through Cal Fire. Because Cal Fire, I don't believe, would be supporting it at crossing. Because this is an active creek. It currently has water. It had water in it early fall when we went to visit the site.
And I imagine it runs part of the year, right?
I think it maybe runs almost all year round.
Yeah.
So with that, I believe Cal Fire, looking at any permit, building permit-wise, would not approve anything with less than improved access. And because of that, and because there's a number of triggers that would require us to go through additional review because of the slope of the building envelope in Lot 2 is over 10%, which requires a minor use permit, if nothing else. Environmental review for grading. So there's a variety of triggers that apply additional review of the application, making sure that there is a bridge to improve and not
there
to
it is, 33. 32. Let's see.
Maybe I can try and clarify. At the time of issuance of any kind of construction permit, you have to show legal and physical access to the site, and included in that is a review by Cal Fire. And so if legal and physical access to the site mandates a bridge, they're going to make sure the bridge meets their needs, and all of these conditions make sure that the bridge complies with Army Corps or Fish and Game or any other kind of requirements.
Yes, maybe said another way. The way I understand the way staff has written the report is that if any of these agencies deem a bridge is required, then if the commission approves this application staff report as it's written, then basically the commission is saying put in the bridge. If none of the agencies, in the unlikely event that any of the agencies, including CAL FIRE, don't require a bridge, then we're not superseding that their judgment by saying put it in anyway. And I'm satisfied that I'll leave it up to the responsible agencies to make that determination.
I'm sorry.
Mr. Nall.
John Nall.
Yeah.
I see it a little bit differently than that.
Okay.
Just a little bit.
Okay.
In that, yes, CAL FIRE is definitely a player here with regard to the requirement for the bridge, but these other agencies that are mentioned in this condition on 213R,
yes,
those agencies are mentioned because they have potential permitting authority over the crossing.
Okay.
And so that was the only clarification I wanted to make. There's a very good chance that the applicant will have to get a permit from Fish and Game and Army Corps to put a bridge over this stretch of creek.
Right.
If they actually place parts of the bridge in the creek channel.
Yeah, and if CAL FIRE said you don't need a bridge, then they never get never get permits.
Exactly.
So, I see your distinction there, but okay. I agree.
That's all I had.
So if CAL FIRE says you don't need a bridge and it's running part of the year with water, I guess you just don't build. Is that the...
Well, they're not allowed to put the bridge in during the wet season. It has to be the dry season. And that would be a condition of any permit, Army Corps Fish and Game, automatically. But staff assumed that a bridge was going to have to be built when we looked at this project, and that's why you see a condition like R on page 2-13, because we're figuring there's no way that you're not going to build a bridge and have adequate access to that eastern parcel.
And I'm confident the applicant's engineer agrees with that because when he spoke at the podium,
exactly.
He didn't. We gave the Slow Conservancy a hard time with all the loose ends issues, and I think what you do for one private party or for a public party, you know, community project, you do for everybody.
Sure.
It just seems to me that as a heads up to possible future owners, it might be good to include some language in here that that references the probable need for a bridge.
We could reference probable need. I also tend to agree with Cammie's comments about the fact that we at this point, it's not a given. When we get a little closer to development, that decision will be made. And so that's why you have the wording in that condition R on 2-10.
Yeah, and all of this is very straightforward as to going and asking for permission from the various regulatory agencies about where you put your bridge supports. And so I'm thinking also on this issue of equitable treatment of projects in Sea Canyon. Did we not have some bridge language in there? I'm just thinking back to that particular project. I know there was a whole series of future parcels that were going to have the need for bridge access.
Well, Commissioner Topping, so long as County Council doesn't have a problem with language that's like there's a possibility that a bridge may be required or however you worded it, then we can put that in and move on.
I'm ready to do that.
Are you okay
if we can have that kind of language added?
Right. Ms. McDonald? I don't see any problem with that.
Okay. If staff would try to draft something responsive to Commissioner Topping's request.
I think it could be as simple as on 15A where you talk about the access being denied as part of the additional map sheet, that you just go on to say a bridge may be necessary to provide access to the building sites and just leave it at that.
That sounds good.
Great. Thank you, Ms. Griffin. Okay. Mr. Topping, did you have other questions?
If the leach field's outside of the building envelope.
Okay, yeah, I'm ready
to
make
a few questions. Oh. No, I had to wait until.
All right.
But
sorry.
I'm the caboose. Questions.
I have a couple of questions.
Oh, sure. Go ahead.
Paul, I mean, in the. I'm sorry.
On 2-31, there's a letter from the health agency referencing the office being in receipt of sufficient evidence of water. Do you know what, in the form of a report from Filippone and Thompson, do you know what that report actually said?
No, I do not.
Okay. Mr. Orton, do you know what the well reports are for the property?
Good question.
Yeah, Terry Orton, I was actually hoping somebody else was going to answer that for me. We had a well on the one site, and they've been quite familiar. Philip and Thompson has been quite familiar with that well. And on the other site, we have a spring that provides water at that right at the moment. And they're also familiar with that particular area.
Are you familiar with the letter that's referenced in Mr. Terry's letter here? He says it's talking about sufficient evidence of water in the form of a report. So I'm presuming that a well was drilled on lot two or not?
No, not on lot two. No, lot one has a well. Lot two does not.
So we don't really know. There is a presumption that a new owner of lot two would be able to find water, but there's no actual evidence of that.
The evidence,
other than a spring, but
right, and the spring is what a lot of those people out there are using.
Okay.
They're actually not necessarily using wells at this time. A lot of the older houses.
Okay, mm-hmm. And thank you. That answers that question, Paul. Question on the status. Back to the status of the existing residents. Am I understanding that the existing residents, in order for the validity of this approval, the existing residents has to be permitted, or the existing residents stays as is, regardless of the approval of the application?
The existing residents, you need to provide proof of the history of the residents, pretty much showing when this, when was this
built? What was that?
History of the residents.
History.
When was it built?
Yeah.
Under what building code standards was it built? Permitting history, really.
Okay, so it stays grandfathered in.
Correct.
As it is. But there was some discussion of
bringing it up
to code in what event? I mean, wasn't there discussion to that?
Prior condition for getting subsequent construction permits is what I understood.
Could you...
There's
that kind of went over my head.
Okay.
Yeah.
There's actually a number of... I don't know the full history of this, but in the area plan standards, there's some very specific standards to this lot and this lot alone. One, limiting the lot size, which is 160 acres. Two, limiting the number of developments, the residential developments, to a one per lot. So that's why the building envelope was allowed to be moved, along with the weird coastal zone area standard, which says you cannot have a new residence or new residential development in the coastal zone. Where the current residence is, the building envelope moved inland because if there was to be a residence and someone wanted to build something new, they would have to remove the old one, and then it would then comply with both the coastal zone land use ordinance the coastal area plan and the inland area plan. So again, the inland area plan says only one residence per lot.
And that's specific, though, to this property is what
Correct.
You're saying, because rural lands allows more normally, doesn't it? Okay, two. So thank you. So specifically, when the area plan was being drafted, it addressed this property in particular.
For some reason, that was drafted.
Okay, so now I understand that. But then go back to the question of, does anything have to happen with the existing residents? If somebody wants to build on lot one, they have to demolish the existing residents. Is that correct?
Unless if they wanted to do anything beyond basic maintenance upkeep, maybe I don't know if you really could do much of an expansion on the existing residence, but yes, if you wanted to do any residential development on lot one, you need to demolish the existing residence and build a new one.
And that would include, you just touched on it, so if somebody wanted to remodel the existing residence, they could not?
That would depend on building code and planning codes. I'm not...
They're going to have a tough time because it is a grandfathered residence. What I was going to try to do to make this a little clearer was explain that this is really about the current status of the building versus the location. In other words, you can't build another house on this particular lot.
Understood.
Unless you demolish this one. If you want to keep this one, you can't build.
The fact that in order to build on building lot one, they'd have to demolish the existing structure, I don't think that's reflected in the approval. So I think we need to make that clear, because otherwise I don't think it was clear in the way
I agree. That was one of my questions I was going to ask, to see if we could add a condition to that effect so that it's very clear what the rules are here.
Yes, you have, Mr. Orton.
Hello, Mr. Orton. Would you like to weigh in on this topic?
Yes, Terry Orton again. One thing, and this is, I haven't even talked to my clients about this. This is me as opposed to them. But if it's talking about that as a residential use, and I am wondering if that building, if it were not as a residential use, could be left there and not have to be torn down. And I'm just mentioning that, and the reason I mention it, because it is an older structure. And it does mean a lot to the family, I know, because it's been there forever. So if it is possible not to make a requirement that it be demolished, but that it be removed as a residential use.
Perhaps we could just say only one residence is allowed on that lot.
Actually, we don't need to say that, because I hate to disagree with our esteemed counsel, but there's a planning area standard that says that. If anybody comes in to do anything on this property, the permit center is going to look at the planning area standard and say there's a density limitation and there's a primary residence limitation on the site. There really isn't a need to put that on as an additional map sheet. It's simply a part of the ordinance to begin with. If we did, it would just simply be to be noting it, because perhaps at the time of sale this wouldn't have been disclosed, but I would hope that our ordinances and the applicable ordinances would be disclosed. If you wanted to add something to the additional map sheet, then it should read exactly the way the planning area standard reads, which is primary residence use and construction is limited to one on each parcel. That solves your problem. That really doesn't say you have to demolish to build another. It's that's what's allowed.
In addition, Mr. Chairman, staff wouldn't have a problem with the proposal by the applicant's agent that this residence could be converted to, say, a barn, I think was what he was getting at, or storage.
Artist studio.
Well, I don't know. Does that fly in the face of any coastal regulations? I mean, do we know that?
We don't think so.
We don't?
No.
It could be converted to a guest house. Since a guest house is really all it is a detached bedroom.
Because the planning area standard that Cammie's talking about talks about residential development, not a converted type use like a barn.
Right. So as Ms. Griffin initially said, if we remain silent on that point and just leave it the way it is, that mm-hmm. there shall be
yes, one. Yes, I was just making a clarification. I was further clarifying that we don't have a problem with that structure being converted to a different type of a use.
Okay, but to respond to Mr. Orton, and if I were him, I'd want to make sure that anything that's in there the way it is now does not require that structure be torn down to build another residence on that same lot, so long as that existing structure is not any longer a residence.
Well, what's the problem?
So we don't seems to me we don't need to do anything.
Yeah, what's
correct?
There's no problem.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So the buyers down the line have plenty of information if they do their due diligence. Is that the point of view?
I'd say so.
Yes.
You don't need to.
You don't need to repeat
that. Repeat that language.
No.
Okay.
Okay, it's buyer beware then.
I don't see any other speaker lights on, so I'd like to ask my questions. On page 2-1, this is just a housekeeping item, but when we're reading the motion, we're going to be saying tentative track TR-3023. However, back in the findings, it's not referred that way. It's referred to just 3023, there's no TR. So just so we're legally correct on the motion, which is correct?
We will place the tract abbreviation. That's what we're...
I didn't understand that. Say again.
So you're saying that there's no TR 3023 in the...
Oh, where it's on page 2-8.
Right.
It says tract 3023, no TR, and I'm asking which is right. If
the correct
abbreviation for tract.
Yeah,
okay, so we should read the motion as it's shown on page 2-1.
That's correct.
Okay, tentative track TR 3023. All right. Go across some trees. And then there'd be utilities that would have to serve lot 2 and building envelope. So has anybody done in a...
The path of travel that we took is already disturbed. There's an at-grade crossing, as we've talked about, across the creek. There's no real tree removal that will be needed there.
Right.
And as you go through into the open areas where the grassland is, there's a path of travel there that will that is a logical driveway. So we're not foreseeing really any tree removal, but...
Okay.
Just in the outside case, yes, we do have some wording in there.
Okay. Page 2-8 starts the conditions of approval for TR 3023. As you mentioned, there are existing conditions on the prior lot split. Now, those continue to apply. These don't supersede those conditions, or do they?
They can. Although this, so we've carried forward the conditions that are applicable, or that staff feels are applicable. The ones that we've left out deal with flood hazard. So we can go over those if you'd like.
No, but there's nothing in here that says the prior conditions are null and void.
That's true.
So in just in case that that one of those conditions might be applicable in the future, they would still be applicable, and no one could say, well, this superseded all of those, and those don't apply anymore.
Just for clarification, was that prior approval a subdivision?
It was a parcel map.
All conditions of approval of subdivisions must be met before the map can record. So you can assume that every condition of approval on that prior parcel map was complied with and is done because that map was recorded. So these are the subsequent conditions then that would apply to this map, and actually all of these have to be met before the map records, which is why we do that additional map sheet condition. Those are the only things that continue on past recordation of the final map.
And those were the ones that we added today.
Okay. So where does it say there cannot be any more lot splits on these parcels?
Doesn't need to say that because our zoning ordinance says that. Our zoning ordinance has that limitation that sets the minimum parcel size that...
Okay, so that wasn't just in those original conditions. That's actually...
That's in our ordinance, yeah.
Right.
Okay. On page 2-9, it says all utilities, number 9, all new electric telephone cable, et cetera, shall be installed underground or overhead. Well, so I don't know that there's a third way, but is there there's no requirement for undergrounding in our ordinances here?
Glenn Marshall, County Public Works. You're outside the urban reserve line, so they can do overhead.
Okay, that's the ticket. Okay, and then on page 2-10, there's a condition 47 after 14.
Yeah, Paul is as
have you
corrected
that? Okay, great. Okay, we covered that. On page 2-56 of the negative deck, this is under the wastewater section. And under impacts and mitigation, it says there's potential for one new residence on the eastern parcel.
But there's also a potential for one new residence on the western parcel, correct? Does this, since it doesn't say anything about the western parcel, does that have any significant bearing on the negative deck or on any conditions that might have to be added?
My apologies. Could you clarify which section of this page you're reading from?
Yes. Impacts mitigation at the bottom. And it's the second line, starting with there is. And then I was looking for what the implications were on the western parcel, but I couldn't find any, and maybe there are none. But
that was, I believe, an omission on my behalf.
So is there anything that's required to be added into the conditions?
I think we're probably okay, Mr. Chairman. I would glance over to council and make sure this was
building envelopes 1 and 2.
May I have a second?
Well, I'll second that, and there was other modifications, too.
Okay.
Yeah, just as modified would be better.
As modified.
Okay, I'll second that.
Just to be clear, what were the other modifications? So we're
the Caltrans access.
All the red language. Okay,
yeah.
Right.
All right.
Is there any further discussion about this motion? If not, Ramona, would you please call the roll?
Commissioner Topping?
Yes.
Commissioner Christensen?
Yes.
Commissioner Irving?
Yes.
Commissioner Murphy?
Yes.
Chairman O'Grady?
Yes. Motion passes 5-0. Congratulations to the applicant. That concludes our business for the day, with the exception that I need a motion to take all testimony and documents into the record.
So moved.
Thank you. And a second, please?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
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 Any opposed? None. Motion passes 5-0. And then finally, a motion to adjourn the meeting and the next regular meeting, which is the 24th, maybe?
No.
June.
That's right.
June 10th.
Sometime in June.
Sometime in June. Let's leave it.
No move.
Second.
Well-oiled machine here on the commission.
Aye.
All in favor?
Yes.
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? None. Meeting adjourned. Thank you, everybody.
It is the 14th. You're right, Cammie.
It's the 14th?
Yeah.